At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only 10 bucks every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
In Indiana, summer means more than sunshine. It's hiking miles and miles of trails to magnificent views and cruising through caves on underground river rides. It's spending the night in a floating cabin and scuba diving into your next big adventure. It's riding a horse and buggy through historic towns and camping with elephants at a wildlife park. It's anything but ordinary. Plan your trip at inindiana.com/summer.
This is a podcast from Minute Media.
Welcome, Red Sox fans. Here are the Bastards of Boston Baseball.
Welcome, everyone. The Bastards are back for this Friday edition of the podcast. We are brought to you in part by the Minute Media Podcast Network. Red Sox just wrapped up a 4-game set with the Anaheim Angels winning the series 3-1. They are still currently in fourth place, 11.5 games back behind the unstoppable New York Yankees. Red Sox still are in possession, though, of the third wild card slot. Quick disclaimer, as always, for any first-time listeners, this is not a homer podcast. We call it how we see it. When the Red Sox are dominating, we will celebrate that. When they are getting destroyed, we will be critical and at times savagely blunt. If you are easily offended, press the stop button immediately. But for those who embrace it, let's get rolling. I am Terry Cushman, coming to you from Myrtle Beach, South Carolina, by way of Windham, Maine. You can harass me on Twitter at CushmanMLB. You can find the podcast account at Bastards_Boston. Joining us tonight from the city of Canton, Massachusetts, Jason Kelly. Jason, how are you?
I'm doing pretty well. I wish I could feel a little bit better about, you know, after this series, but I don't know, felt a little bit hollow to me, like a lot of close games, a lot of games that felt like could have slipped away from them. So I know that like the Red Sox are kind of inching their way back, but it feels like it could be better. So I'm right now is what I would say. I'm just meh. Yeah, everything's okay.
Officially, even though the pitching matchups got jumbled from what we thought they would be based on the seemingly unreliable ESPN site, I had us splitting the series, so I was pleasantly surprised we came out of it 3-1. So, but we've got a lot to get into this episode. Jason, where can they find you on Twitter? Since I also suck at remembering this part.
Yeah, you can find me at Color of the Iris on Twitter.
Color of the Iris. Also joining us tonight from the Mile High City of Denver by way of Quincy, Massachusetts, Andrew Dwan. Andrew, how are you?
Doing well. Feeling a little bit more confident with this team than I think you guys might be. I don't know. They got that wild card spot and kind of full steam ahead. I don't really have too much worries about Cleveland and I think Chicago both chasing them. So, yeah, I'm doing pretty well.
Don't write out off my Guardians, man. I know I didn't finally pick them this year, but much like Jason's always on the Judge train, I'm always on the Guardian train. I don't know. If Terry Francona is managing a baseball team, typically they perform for him. So we'll see about that. Well, as Jason said, we were kind of fortunate to come out of it 3-1. You had two games that were 1-0. We win those games. We weren't winning those games earlier in the year, even if they were a little bit more high scoring. We weren't winning the 2-1 games, the 3-2 games. So, luck is still a component here. And I think we had a little bit of it this series. And, one of my takeaways.
Yeah, I agree. And it's one of those things where you go into a series with a team that just fired its manager. And, that does tend to, spark a team. When they fire the manager, they tend to go on a little bit of a winning streak. At least that's usually what happens. Didn't quite happen with the Angels this time, but still, Trout gets hurt in the middle of the series. He misses, the last two games. Rendon's still out. David Fletcher's still out. They're not exactly fully loaded right now. And, they've lost so many in a row. It's like, I should be happy, but in a way it's like, it feels like they just escaped with the wins that they did. It doesn't feel like they went in there and hammered a team that's really on the ropes and struggling. They just kind of did what they had to do and escaped with a couple of wins. So maybe that's being nitpicky, but I would have liked to see them really step on their throats, because if this team is, has aspirations of going to the playoffs, that's the kind of team you need to be, even in June, even when it's early. But I would have liked to see that.
I don't know. I saw these pitchers go in and shut down. I mean, a complete game for Michael Wacha, as dominant as he was. I don't think anyone expected that this season. I don't think anyone expected 8 innings or 7 full innings out of Wacha. I think they're starting to really hit their stride as a staff. They look a little more cohesive. It had been the offense picking them up, and it was good to see, the pitchers carry their weight this time and really pick up the slack for an offensive attack that really wasn't there. I was encouraged.
Yeah, I'm not discouraged at all about the pitching, and we're going to get into a lot of that here momentarily. But pitching's been, at least the starters have been fine all year. I think Rich Hill is the only one with an ERA in the fours or higher. Everybody else is pitching well. It's just the offense has been flat at times. And I mean, we can get into that right now if you want. Kike going to be out for a little while. He's going to see a hip specialist. So that seems to point to the possibility that this could be a several week stint. And then I just saw just now the Red Sox have selected the contract of Rob Refsnyder. I mean, that's sexy. And we just got a lot of retread guys in this lineup now. I think we're going to be seeing a lot of Arroyo. I'm not totally down. I mean, Cordero's been struggling. Dahlbeck and Bradley, they are who they are. They're going to have their spots where they're great and painful. So I think Bloom needs to make a move here. I don't think we can wait. And this Angels bullpen has been just getting tattooed lately, and we couldn't do anything with it. So I think that just kind of shows you that.
What move would you want to see be made? Because no one's out of it at this point, Like, City is, but it takes two to tango. The reason they're bringing Refsnyder up is – allegedly there's a lot, gonna be a lot of lefties in the Mariners series. It's seen on Twitter right now, but I think like Duran, I guess I'd assume would be up early next week.
Yeah, he's another one. I'm just not. I just don't think he's gonna be the spark that we're all hoping. You know, he's had a good good start to the season in AAA, and on paper, I mean, his cup of coffee with the Red Sox doesn't look too bad. He did get some hits in there and helped us with some base running, but I don't know. I think Bloom needs to get creative. He needs to find somebody serviceable, you know, at least in the outfield, and I don't know what that would be either.
Yeah, it's tough right now. Like, when you look around the league, there's, like Andrew said, there's very few teams that are, like, already slipping out of it. A lot of teams are still kind of in it. There's a lot of parity around the league, and even the guys that are on those teams that are slipping out of it, you know, CJ Cron with the Rockies, I would love to have, but the Rockies won't move him because they're stupid and stubborn, so you can't get him. Christian Walker with the Diamondbacks. The Diamondbacks are out of it, but Christian Walker's taking a step back. So, because I'm looking at first base options personally. Like, I think that's one of the weakest spots in the lineup, and there's just not much you can do. So, the Red Sox are kind of stuck right now. It's almost like they need to wait for more teams to fall out of it officially. So, if a move's going to be made, you may have to wait till July, which gets tough because then you're competing with the Yankees and any other team that's in a playoff race. They're going to be after the same kind of guys that you are. So you may have to wait a month, but it's going to be tough. It's going to be tough for Bloom to navigate those waters.
I think if we were playing anyone in our division this series, we might have lost it 3-1. I'm just worried. I see we're finally two games above 500. I don't want a painful week and a half to happen, and now we're four games under again. That's what I'm worried about, and I think there's a little bit of writing on the wall that could happen. I thought I had another point in there, but so we'll get into it. I mean, the audience is probably like, what's the matter with you guys? We just went 3-1. I don't know. But let's just go ahead and get into studs and duds. Obviously, starting on the stud side of it, Andrew, who do you have? Who's your stud for the series?
For me, this was easy. I had the guy that I picked as a closer going into the year, and he now seems to have emerged as the actual closer, and that's Matt Strom. He looked as good as anyone could possibly look. Two games in a row he pitched. I don't know if a single Red Sox has picked up a save on consecutive days yet this season, and he did. And he looked great doing it. The Angels had no chance against him. They even faked getting hit by pitches, which was the biggest BS move by Marsh. Didn't even know what hand to grab. Strom, I think, is the guy for this role. I think he can completely solidify it, and I hope – to God, the next time that they have, you know, a 1-3 run lead, not Matt Strom's trotting out of that bullpen, because I really have felt this way the entire season. Matt Strom can be your closer.
Yeah, I agree. Of all the relievers in that Red Sox bullpen, Strom is the one I trust the most right now. He's been awesome. He's had like maybe one or two hiccups at the most this whole season, and I don't think they've even been that bad. He should be your closer. There's no debate around this, and the Red Sox are just one of those weird teams that Cora is one of those weird guys. He doesn't want to name a closer because for whatever stupid reason, but Matt Strom, for all intents and purposes, is your closer and should be your closer. He's been dynamite. He looked great this series. He was making Angels hitters just – looking foolish, you know, changing speeds on them. Andrew mentioned it, that the at-bat that Brandon Marsh had where he tried to get away with faking like he got hit by the pitch. I mean, it's just he is your best guy coming out of that bullpen. I you know, there's no one else in there that you should trust more than him. So, and he's a lefty. And, you know, look, we've talked about it before. Lefties have extra value And there's a reason for that. There's a lot of left-handed power hitters in the American League, and not just in the American League, National League too, but you got to worry about the American League. A lot of left-handed power hitters, and Strom has an advantage against those guys. So I see no reason why he can't be your closer and why you shouldn't just name him that. He was awesome this series, and just got to keep riding that wave. He's without a doubt been one of Bloom's best signings from the offseason for sure.
I would have no issues whatsoever if Strom was the closer. I do think Austin Davis is pretty trustworthy, though. 1.57 ERA. I would not put him as the closer. I kind of like him in the role that he's in, but continues to be impressive. But Strom, though, did not look good before this series in a couple outings. Baltimore tuned him up for 3 earned runs. He only lasted a third of an inning. Only lasted a third of an inning against Oakland. Only gave up 1 earned run. So it was nice to see him kind of get back, you know, into his groove and start pitching effectively. And I just assume that what we saw those couple of bad outings was simply a blip. I mean, the dude had been phenomenal. I know I mentioned it in another show, but before that Baltimore series, he had been scoreless in 15 out of 17 outings. Just had a really impressive run going into that, and can punch guys out, and you know, just extremely impressive. So hopefully we will see him in that closing role. I will say this, Robles came back, looked okay. So if Alex Cora is going to play favorites just to spite us, that could happen. But hopefully Strom keeps it. Jason, go ahead. Stud for the series.
Michael Wacha. Unbelievable. Complete game. You know, touch 96 at times with his velocity. If you had asked me who on this Red Sox pitching staff would throw complete games before the season started, Michael Wacha would not have been on my list. I thought for sure he was just stretch guy, you know, bullpen guy, maybe. Like, at the best, he'll give you 6 innings, maybe 7 if you really stretch him. I didn't think he had the velocity in him that he showed that other night. Like, touching 95, 96 with his fastball and a fastball with movement. I mean, he was making Trout look silly at times, which is hard to do. So, look, it's a move that we all kind of, you know, raised our eyebrows at when Bloom brought him in, because he didn't exactly have an impressive year in 2021. And Bloom went out there and not only signed him, but gave him a little bit of a pay raise from what he made last year. And we all kind of went, oh, that's weird. Okay, I don't know if that's going to work. But Michael Wacha has an ERA under 2, just barely under 2. It's at like 1.99, I think. But still, ERA under 2. He's been your most stable, one of your most stable starters throughout the entire season. Had one brief stint on the IL, but that's it. Has come back, has looked just as strong. He's looking like an absolute steal from this offseason. And I'm not expecting complete games from him. I'm not expecting, you know, 8-plus innings from him every start. I assume that, you know, he'll regress to the mean and he'll be a 6-7 inning guy. But you know what? If he's a 6-7 inning guy who keeps runs off the board and, you know, has an ERA under 3 for the rest of the season, what a steal that is. I mean, unbelievable. He was a guy I thought like maybe wouldn't even hang on to his rotation spot when Sale and Paxton came back. Now I'm sitting here going, you've got to find a way to keep him in, because he's just been too reliable. He's been too good. So Michael Wacha has completely changed my mind on him. He's been awesome. And, you know, it's one of Bloom's better signings. So credit to him for taking the chance on him, taking a flyer on him, because it's totally worked out.
Yeah. How many pitchers in the league do you trust to get Ohtani out 4 times? maybe like two or three. Even in then, you know, you're really asking a lot. And maybe the most impressive thing about this nine inning effort out of him was he threw 105 pitches. So you're at less than 12 pitches per inning, which the efficiency is like Maddox-esque right there. He really did a great job just allowing himself, setting himself up to go that full nine. And I was a little nervous, let him go out for the ninth. And I know people would probably be pissed off if Cora didn't let him go for the ninth, but I wouldn't have blamed him if, you know, he didn't. But credit to Waka. He battled through, got some really good competition out there. And no one, I guarantee that no one probably throws, gets Ohtani out. No single pitcher will get Ohtani out four times in a game again.
I've been owning it for at least a couple weeks now. I mean, that he was my least favorite, as I've said. Least favorite signing when it happened last winter, and he's been phenomenal. People on social media are starting to dig up those tweets. I got roasted pretty bad in the 24 hours after that start. People were, because I tweeted out it was a trash signing. I think it was a GIF of someone saying trash, and just getting completely roasted on Twitter. And I owned it as best as I could. You know, I'm never going to admit I'm wrong. And so it was impressive. And that complete game really did come out of nowhere, though. In his eight previous outings this season, he had only gone six full innings once. And that was April 27th against the Blue Jays. So it's not like he was gradually starting to go deeper into games, seven innings, eight innings. He just pulled it together on kind of a magical night. He also struck out the most batters he had previously with six punch-outs. He's never really been a high punch-out guy anyway. Twice this year, both times in the month of April, he got five strikeouts, once against the Twins and the other time against the Blue Jays. The walks have continued to drop, though, which kind of speaks to the fact he's commanding a little bit better. He had one walk in this outing. His two previous outings against the Reds and the White Sox, he actually didn't give up a walk in either of those starts. He's also only given up four home runs on the year. So just a guy that's been highly effective. Do you guys think Bloom sitting up in his booth there, whatever the, probably the owner's box rather, and just kicking himself for not including an option in with that signing?
He might be now, because yeah, if Waka keeps going like this, then you know, Waka's still, he it feels like he's been around forever, but he's not that old. So yeah, he's well due for a good second contract after this. And just one thing you pointed out with the walks going down and the home runs being down too, it feels like Waka's trusting his fastball a lot more as the season goes on. Feels like when he first started pitching, it was all like change-ups. That was like his signature. Now it feels like he is trusting his fastball more. Maybe he's feeling stronger with it. It's making a huge difference. But yeah, like you said, I'm sure Bloom's sitting there going, ah, geez. Yeah, this might be a one and done if this keeps going like this.
I mean, just think about it. If this team was out of it at the deadline and Waka was pitching like this, I wonder what they could have got for him or what they could get for him. Shit, I mean, if, who knows, if Paxton and Sale look great, maybe he just turns around, flips him for a top 100 guy, and I don't know, job well done.
It's just been unbelievable, really. And I don't know. I mean, it looks like it's going to be sustainable and he's going to have a good year, but I certainly didn't expect this out of him. So, all right. I'm going outside the box, as I teased. My stud for the series is Carlos Feblase, Red Sox third base coach. And both of the 1-0 wins we had, he made a very aggressive move to send Alex Verdugo home on both of those wins from third base. The first one was, I forget who had the base hit, but it went out to center. The center fielder, it looked like Verdugo was kind of checking up at third, but the center fielder had a very lazy throw into the cutoff man.
And, that was Trout.
Oh, that was Trout. My bad. Yeah. Yes, it was. Yes, that was game one. He got hurt. Did he go on the DL or the injured list? Is that beneficial? No, so day to day. But he... I don't think he played after a couple innings into game two. He came out after a base hit. But anyway, so Trout threw that lazy ball in and Feeble sends him home. The other time, game three, Dahlbeck was able to shoot an opposite field base hit down the right field line. And Verdugo was at first, was rounding the bases, you know. Had his wheels going, and Feeble sent him home again. And just a couple aggressive moves win you two of those games. Who knows what the outcome is if both those runs don't score. So I was really impressed. Verdugo himself did have a good series, was 5 for 16, just had a good last 30 days because a lot of us were starting to really get on him. And Andrew pointed out the advanced metrics kind of suggested he was just unlucky a lot of the time, but that seems to have changed, and getting a lot of production out of him in the 5-6 hole. Let's see, going down the line, J.D. Martinez, 5 for 15. Vasquez was 4 for 16. And the impressive thing about Vasquez this series, game three, one of the 1-0 games, he was the first baseman. And, you know, pretty adequate. Let me mention this, because I didn't know where I was going to put this in there. Look at Connor Wong's game logs since May 18th till now. He is tearing it up. Not a ton of extra base hits, although he has had 4 in his last 6 games, 4 doubles. But he's hitting .353 since May 18th. And I'm addressing my concerns about the lineup, and we got Vasquez playing first. I don't think you really want to make that a full-time thing, but maybe you catch lightning in a bottle with Wong and he catches some games for you. I don't think we really need Plawecki at this point. I mean, base runners are going to take liberties all day long on him and take second base. He's got a bad arm. He's not hitting like he had the previous 2 years. He was pretty solid. He was able to slap some opposite field singles, and that's not really happening this year. So I'm wondering if in the next maybe couple weeks, Connor Wong gets some looks. If you're not going to trade for someone, you're going to have to get creative.
Yeah, I'm all in favor of Connor Wong taking Kevin Plawecki's spot, because Plawecki has really regressed, in this second year with the team. And, you know, he was always a bench guy to begin with, but this is like, it feels like he's really gone backwards. And look, at this point, Connor Wong it's not like he's 19 years old. You know, he's been a minor league player for quite a while now. So you have to figure out what exactly you have in him. And seems like when he was up here for that brief stint, he did well with the pitching staff as well. You know, and that's a brief sample size. But if he can call a good game and he can hit a little bit, having him platoon with Vasquez behind the plate, I think would help this team a lot. Because like you said, Plawecki, I don't see a use for him. He's a complete zero defensively in terms of throwing runners out. He's very vulnerable there. Offensively, he hasn't really given you a ton. So why not? I mean, again, especially if you're Bloom. Like, this is one of the guys that you brought in. So this is one of the main prizes from the Mookie trade. So you might as well get as much out of him as you can. And if he's raking down in the minor leagues, bring him up, you know, get rid of Plawecki, do what you can with him, bring Connor Wong up and platoon him with Vasquez, see what you can get, because Vasquez isn't getting any younger. And if Connor Wong looks like he could be your catcher of the future, that would be a really good positive for the second half of this season.
I mean, I wouldn't mind seeing him once every like 4 or 5 days, but I don't think you're going to have him extended more than that. Just Vasquez handles the pitching staff pretty damn well. You don't really want Vasquez at first. Every throw really does kind of have to be perfect. He's 5'9", so any of those throws coming from Devers are an extreme liability. Like, there was one the other night where Vasquez pretty much had to jump and barely got – well, tried to get back down on the bag and he couldn't. You know, a guy like Dahlbeck just catches that like chest high. So, yeah, and to give Christian a spell behind the plate, I'm absolutely down. I've been saying Plawecki provides nothing all year. I have no problem getting rid of him and his laundry cart. That's literally all he's provided. He can hit the bricks. He's just a backup catcher, and those guys are a dime a dozen.
Yeah, he came up with the laundry cart home run celebration thing. So, he's made his mark in a short time with the Red Sox as far as being a good clubhouse guy. But, I mean, if we need to figure out what Connor Wong is. I'm starting to wonder if perhaps maybe they do give Vasquez a shorter term deal, maybe a 3-year deal after this. This is the first year he's handled the pitching staff as well as he has, because their ERAs, if you look at the advanced stats, are usually in the fours with Vasquez catching. So this year has been the exception, and the rotation's pitching pretty well, you know, with him. Bullpen, not so much, but I don't know that that's necessarily a Vasquez thing. So it's kind of, it could be pretty interesting to see what they do. And I think Vasquez would take a slight discount to stay here. I think he's horrified. I think it was not last season, but the season before. The deadline, I think, was September 1st, because that was 2020, and it was weird. But he heard his name in trade rumors, and he literally sent someone up to the front office to see if they were on the verge of trading him. So he's another guy, I think, that wants no part of playing anywhere else. And I think a month ago, we thought it was a foregone conclusion. Yeah, he's gone after this year. So... Could be interesting, you know.
I mean, you could do a lot worse than Vasquez. I mean, yeah, people have always wanted to get rid of him, but name me the last good catcher that came available in free agency. You know, none.
Well, Contreras, they don't real Muto. You don't think? I don't know.
They might, you know, he'll probably get moved at the deadline for an absolute haul. I mean, New York, both New York teams will be probably fighting over him, and then I could absolutely see them extending him. But yeah, it just doesn't happen. And I have such.
No, sorry. I was just gonna say, like, I wonder too if with Vasquez, like Terry mentioned, he would stay a little bit cheaper, because Contreras, I think actually he's gonna get moved, and it's gonna cost a lot to get him and cost a lot to re-sign him too. I wonder if Vasquez would stay for cheaper, because I heard something tonight that, like, he's close to catching Varitek for, like, most games as a Red Sox catcher or something like that. Like, he's up on that leaderboard, and I wonder if he's just at the point where he's, like, he's comfortable here, he knows it here, and he just kind of wants that record a little bit. So maybe he would stay. Maybe, you know, he wouldn't cost much. And like Andrew said, you can do a lot worse than him. I mean, we've been frustrated with him at times, but he's hitting close to 300 and seems to be handling the pitching staff just fine. So you can't really go wrong with that from the catcher position.
Yeah, he's got his average up to 279 after trending about 220 for a while with no real pop. And he does only have two home runs, but he's been clutch in the last few weeks by just, you know, hitting a single and moving the base runners. So we'll see. But I do think it's kind of now or never with Wong. They need to figure out what to do with him. And his minor league numbers have been pretty decent. Like, most teams would probably have him on their roster by now. So I'd like to see what they can do with him. And others have thought he could be a good utility guy. And I mean, it seems like that's all we have right now is utility guys out there. Arroyo plays a lot of positions. Cordero is, you know, first base, right field, but still, I mean, that's still somewhat versatile. And so we'll see. It's just an idea to maybe create some spark. Let's see, more honorable mentions. I think I covered just about everyone in the lineup. Just kind of going down through the pitching here. Nathan Eovaldi, only 5 innings pitched, velocity dropped, but he was still very effective. Didn't give up an earned run, struck out 5, apparently has a hip problem, like Kike. So that kind of bears watching. Doesn't sound like he's going to miss a start. I did hear, Garrett Whitlock might have a hip problem as well, which is kind of scary. He's, only 25, 26 years old, but, we'll get to him shortly. But, John Schreiber continues to look pretty good. Tyler Danish, pretty good. Austin Davis, I already mentioned, has his ERA down to 1.57. Anything you guys want to touch on as far as honorable mentions?
No, I just hope the Red Sox pitching staff isn't turning into the geriatric, you know, community here. You know, AARP cards being handed out, because hip problems are never good for any athlete. But I don't think it's anything serious. I mean, if Valdi, if they're already saying he's not even going to miss a start, tells me that he just had an off day and he'll bounce back. But obviously, they'll have to keep an eye on him his next start. Whitlock, I really feel like, is laboring. I hope they're not pushing him too much. But, I mean, again, I've been against him being in the starting rotation ever since they put him in there. So if they push him too much and they screw him up, it's on them at this point. But I really hope that it doesn't come to that.
Yeah, the Whitlock thing goes back a while now. It was when he made that slide into first base. That's when he agitated it. So
when was that? Roughly?
I mean, early May, I think.
Oh, really? So
yeah, he's been, you can see him limping during games. So yeah, that, I mean, hopefully that's just the thing that heals with time. Maybe skip a starter to bring up, you know, Winkowski or whoever for a quick spot start. But yeah, I mean, the Whitlock, at least it's not his arm.
Yeah, he did strike out 5, which is kind of a lot compared to his last 3 or 4 starts anyway. So, gave up 4 earned runs. I was going to mention all that in the dishonorable mentions, as savage as that might sound for Whitlock. But yeah, so hopefully these guys get treatment, get healthy. But with Eovaldi, that's why you don't give him an extension before that contract's up. All right, let's go ahead, get over to the duds side of things. Andrew, you're dud for the series.
I had Xander. The offense as a whole wasn't very energetic, I guess is a polite way of saying it. But Xander had a lot of opportunities to do stuff and he did nothing. He went 3 for 12, which again was honestly not as bad as a lot of other guys, but he left 11 guys on base, which was really brutal. And they were seemingly non-competitive at bats. There were a lot of, you know, pop-ups and you could see him frustrated. It looked like he really hurt himself. I think that was game 1 with the shoulder. luckily it doesn't seem too bad, and he got a spell tonight, so hopefully he got a little bit of R&R and we'll be back in the lineup tomorrow. But yeah, there were some chances for him to open the games up a little bit more, and he didn't, and luckily it didn't bite them in the ass, but it easily could have.
Yeah, I would describe it as sort of a sleepy series for Xander Bogaerts. He was in there, but didn't really provide any impact. Hopefully that shoulder is okay. With a guy like Xander, you always have to worry because it seems like he gets rest days when he's 100% healthy and then plays when he's hurt. It's really weird. I don't know what that's about. But, yeah, the shoulder thing is concerning. Anytime you see a hitter swing and immediately grab for that area, it's, to me, it's never a good sign. You know, again, hopefully the day off today helped him, and he's back in there this weekend and gets back on track. But yeah, just like Andrew said, not good at bats, non-competitive, just seemed like he was really laboring and just wasn't really fully engaged this series. And I don't know why. Usually he is, but he just felt like he was kind of out of it this whole series. So hopefully he bounces back this weekend, because obviously we know how much the Red Sox need him.
It's his left shoulder, so it's not his throwing shoulder that's bothering him. And there was a play, I think, in the Oakland series where he dove for a ball and I think kind of jammed it a little. So I'm wondering if that's where it comes from. But you did see it at the plate, like you guys said. So fortunately for us, he's in his walk year and he needs to figure it out, because you know, he wants his value to be as high as it can be going into the winter, once he exercises his opt out. But we'll see. I am a little annoyed that Cora gave Story the night off too. Recently he sat, I think it might have been like Bogaerts and JD. I'm like, why take two guys out of your lineup when you know you're gonna need some help? You know, why couldn't Story have tomorrow off instead? I
think a lot of it had to do with that last game against Ohtani, which was almost his rock bottom. He looked so bad. I think he struck out four times that game. I was okay with Story getting rested today. I would have probably rested everyone else if they had the utility guys to fill in.
Well, you have Jonathan Araúz up, and he's kind of got a Travis Shaw situation going. In six games, he's got zero hits. So, you know, that's just the penalty we're paying right now for not having, you know, better quality depth. But, yeah, so we'll see. Hopefully they'll both be in the lineup tomorrow against the Mariners, or tonight for the listening audience. Go ahead, Jason, you're dud for the series.
Yeah, my dud is Christian Arroyo, 2-for-14 in the series. Played in every game, had an opportunity with guys being in and out of the lineup. This is a guy that, you know, we talked about before the season, maybe before the Trevor Story signing, maybe seizing that second base job, and now he's a platoon guy, and he's not even really that good of a platoon guy. Christian Arroyo's only saving grace is that Jonathan Araúz forgot how to hit. And so he's, right now, he's your most valuable platoon guy, which is not a good statement on your roster. So he just was useless this series. Had the bases loaded in one of the games and ground into what should have been a double play, but luckily he beat it out. He's just... I don't know. I don't know if it's the lack of playing time. I don't want to credit him too much by saying that, because if he played every day, he might get exposed, you know, just as he's getting exposed now and would still be hitting the same. But he's just kind of a non-factor anytime he's in there. You know, anytime he has a chance to come up with a big hit or whatever, he just doesn't do it. So I feel like the Christian Arroyo experiment has run its course and has worn itself out. And like I said, the only saving grace for him is that he's your best utility guy. So he's here to stay, whether you like it or not, because Araúz isn't the answer. Ref Snyder won't be the answer. Christian Arroyo is the guy. He has to be on your bench because you need someone in there for when Alex Cora gives Xander Bogaerts 1,000 days off and Trevor Story 1,000 days off. So you're stuck with him, but it's not a good option. And I don't know. I kind of wish that the Red Sox had explored other options for a utility guy, but this is who we got. And I don't think he's very good.
Yeah, I think they're buying time right now for Ryan Fitzgerald to get a little more comfortable playing, you know, all over the diamond, which he kind of has been down in Worcester. So I think once that happens, we're going to see a little 40-man shuffle there because obviously Ryan's not on the 40. But he's a guy that I think if he came up today, he could do everything at the plate that Arroyo can, which, I mean, that's not a compliment. So it might actually be underselling Ryan Fitzgerald. You know, he looked pretty solid in spring training. He says he comes up and he just tries to hit home run every at bat. I don't know how well that's going to translate when you're facing, you know, 98 dotted on the corner. But yeah, I tweeted probably a month ago that I thought Arroyo had 3 weeks left. And unfortunately, I was wrong about that one. Seems like a nice enough guy. Just is not getting it done. And I do think that you are right. The sporadic playing time has kind of been a disservice to him, especially when he's been trying to, you know, play a position he never had before. But we know what happens when he plays, you know, 85% of the time at a, you know, the spot he is used to playing. He'll be pretty darn good, but then something's going to happen.
You mentioned Ryan Fitzgerald was kind of the darling of spring training. I wasn't familiar with him at all before this spring, but having a pretty good stint in Worcester, you know, he's kind of carried that into the minor league season. 11 home runs, 44 runs batted in. He's hitting .273. 347 OBP and an OPS of 172. So 872, excuse me. It's at 1:52 a.m. just for the record as we're recording this. But that his OPS is about 150 points above what would be the league average. So pretty good there. That could be one of those creative moves I'm kind of asking for. He's 27 years old, so it's kind of a now or never situation for him, but I would welcome it. Does he play first base at all?
He's been all over. They're okay. Just kind of moving him everywhere right now.
Yeah, I mean, right field. Well, actually, with Kike out, who knows? Maybe, well, Bradley will probably go to center at this point, I would guess. But yeah, so first base and right field continue to be the, you know, the areas of need. But yeah, so all right. My dud for the series is going to be Franchy Cordero, who went 0-10. He was the only player in the lineup outside of Araúz that didn't have a hit. Araúz only played one game, though. Franchy played all four. Struck out three times. Franchy is actually 3 for his last 32. And his OPS has gone from 825 down to 685. So, ouch. Drop. That was in a tweet by Pete Abraham, who I can't stand, by the way. Have to assign credit where it's due. I'm not going to call him G-Bob. But anyway, so Franchy just is kind of, I hate to say it, but reverting to what we saw in 2021. So hopefully he can figure it out, turn the tide. Maybe the Mariners series is a good place to do that. I think with Kike out, though, you're going to see Franchy still continuing to get quite a bit of playing time. So if this team is going to overachieve as thin as it is right now, he has to be a part of it.
Yeah. And the Mariners series, I mean, we'll get into it, but If, you know, if the pitching matchups are what we think they are, he's going to face two pretty tough lefties in there, which is going to be tough for him. But like you said, with Kike out, what else are the Red Sox going to do? They're probably going to have to play him. And he's in the midst of a 3-for-32 skid. And I don't want to go as far as saying like he looks like the old Franchi, because he's still not striking out as much as he used to. But he is struggling. And yeah, if he goes up against who we think he's going up against this weekend, might be a tough one for him. So hopefully he can dig himself out. But yeah, the Red Sox need him to step up, because with guys in and out of the lineup, he's going to be very important.
He had some decent at bats today. He forced, you know, I think the first walk the Red Sox had gotten off Ohtani this season, really kind of spit out a couple good ones. And unfortunately, he had his bat explode at one point in the game. Actually almost took Ohtani out. And then he did show some pretty decent hustle getting into third on a ball that didn't get too far away from the catcher. I'm not overly concerned about him. I still like his approach right now, but yeah, I think a couple, you know, bloop hits here and there will do a lot for his confidence, because he's still making contact for the most part, luckily.
Well, I'd like to see it. I like him. I like his personality, and I'm kind of hoping. I don't know what Franchi's ceiling is. You know, that's still kind of a mystery, but if he ends up being a poor man's Edwin Encarnacion, I would love that. I mean, you know, he hits from the same side of the plate, you know, for similar power. And, yeah, or you could just say, you know, if he could have like a Mitch Moreland effect. He won't be a gold glover like Moreland, but Moreland was always dangerous against righties anyway. So we'll see. Dishonorables? Can't really roast anyone in the lineup that bad. I mean, Pulecki was 1-for-6. We've already kind of covered him. Already talked about Whitlock. Diekman had one good outing, one not so good outing, where he gave up a hit, an earned run, and walked two. That was in game two of the series. So he continues to be the Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde.
Really quick on Diekman, something that's kind of emerged is he is starting to look really comfortable against lefties mainly. So I think we might see Cora pick and choose a little bit more, because he got out Ohtani and kind of made him, you know, did pretty well against him in that at bat. So maybe he starts getting a little more selective, because coming into the year, his splits were pretty, I think they're down the middle, lefty versus righty. But yeah, he seems to be more comfortable, especially with that slider he throws against lefties.
I was going to mention exactly that. Maybe he just becomes more situational at this point, you know, the classic lefty specialist. And maybe if he does that for a while, he just kind of gets into a groove, and then he will be effective against righties if called upon. But Jason, you got some thoughts on Diekman?
Yeah, I think that's where his path is headed. I feel like that's what he was in Oakland when he was really in his heyday there. He was a lefty specialist. I don't think that he faced too many right-handed hitters over there. So that's kind of where he made his bones. And he does look a lot more comfortable when he's up against a lefty. That big sweeping slider is really tough for left-handers to pick up on. So I'm okay if he just becomes a lefty specialist. I think that that's still applicable in today's game. And like we said, if you do sort of have Strom nailed down as your ninth inning guy, Diekman in the eighth against a lefty heavy sort of three-man spot would be pretty good, I think. So you're starting to see how the bullpen can kind of form itself into something stable if you do that. So I think it's the right move.
Nick Pivetta, 5 innings today, did strike out 11, was charged for 4 earned runs. I don't know how he was charged for those, because
Sawamura let up the 3-run bomb.
Yeah, that was the saw, man.
He did, but I thought one of those inherited runners was forced out at third on a, you know, a force play. So that would have, I think, only left him on the hook for one more base runner. Only one run was given up before that. So, or did I just botch that?
No, I think that, yeah, because the runner was out on third, but he gave up the two-run bomb to Otani, and he was responsible for the runners on first and second. Okay. Sal Moore was only responsible for the home run he gave up, I think.
Well, the one that got gunned down at third on the force play was at second when Otani came in. So I thought that got rid of one of the runs. I'm just not seeing it right, but I was a little surprised to see four runs up there. Not his best outing. He had that second inning, but he did get out of it actually. So, just kind of lost his command there in the last inning, and Sal Mora came in. I'm not going to roast Sal Mora. That is who he is. Sometimes he gets out of it. Sometimes he gives up a dinger. It was a little painful, though, with two outs and then two strikes on who was the hitter that Velasquez. What's his first name? Andrew Velasquez. Yeah, and he's been just terrible this year. He's only hitting 179 on the season. That was his third home run. So if Sal Moore gets out of it, the Red Sox could have potentially tied it with that last run that scored. But, is what it is. I can live with the Angel streak ending at 14 games if it was in the final game of the series. If we would have waltzed in there and they get their first win right away, I would have been so annoyed. And then maybe Madden keeps his job for another week. Who knows? Yeah, Tony La Russa still has his job as of this very hour, but terrible play today. If anyone in the audience missed it, Trey Turner was at the plate with a 1-2 count, one ball, two strikes, and very randomly, La Russa goes, you know what? Let's intentionally walk him, even though we're literally one strike from getting out of the inning. And then Max Muncy comes up and launches one. And that ended up being the difference. And La Russa defended it in the post-game press conference. Didn't really make any sense what his statement was. But I don't know. He could be the next guy. How historic would it be if Joe Madden, if La Russa gets fired, they bring in Madden, and then they go win the World Series, or just have this insanely deep playoff run after sputtering like this? That would be one of the cooler stories ever.
It wouldn't shock me. The one thing I was wondering is there some sort of like MLB regulation that if you're a manager and you're fired midway through your contract, you can't sign with a different team that same year? Because I know in the NFL there's a regulation against that. I don't know if MLB has the same thing, because that would feel odd if, like, Joe Madden probably still has term on his contracts and he just goes and signs with the White Sox.
You make a good point, because he also has a $1 million buyout for next year as well they'll have to pick up. So, and I don't think this has ever happened before either. So you could be onto something, but I was just thinking, I mean, somebody's job who's relatively safe right now, they might lose it because Madden's available, you know, this winter. And for anyone, we did cover the Madden firing in our deep dives episode. That was actually released a day earlier than normal due to the funky West Coast schedule. But if you look at it, Rick Renteria's job with the Cubs wasn't really in danger, but Madden ended up taking it. And then Brad Ausmus's job, I think he had only had it for a year with the Angels, and then Madden, you know, ends up forcing him out. So keeps happening.
The best thing Tony has going for him is that Jerry DePoto there? No, who's the owner?
Jerry Reinsdorf.
Yeah, he loves him. They're like brothers. So
yeah,
yeah. he shouldn't. Honestly, the best thing for the Red Sox is that La Russa doesn't get fired, because I guarantee the White Sox go on like an 800, you know, win percentage run for 2 months after being freed of him.
Yeah. And Jerry Reinsdorf was born in 1936. So
dinosaur's gonna dinosaur.
86 years old and not really up with the times. That front office was so mad. A bunch of 20-somethings in the front office are getting held up by their 86-year-old owner, you know, and that's why they didn't get AJ Hinch. But yeah. Does Reinsdorf still own the Bulls? Yeah, he does. Yeah, so he owns the Bulls.
Unfortunately, yeah, unfortunately he still does.
Yeah. Bulls and the White Sox. The Bulls and the Cowboys had like that run. You know, the Bulls obviously a little bit better because they got 6 championships in the 90s. But they're both on the same drought anyway. And the Cowboys have a stupid owner. So, yeah. All right. Enough football talk on a baseball podcast. So let's just go ahead and get into the Mariners series. We have to go with ESPN again. They were wrong on the matchups we gave last regular show. Otani and Detmers ended up pitching one day after each of those guys were scheduled, but we got to go with something. So I'm pretty sure all the Red Sox tentative starters will be who they are. So on Friday, this is a 10-10 start. At least some of us won't have to get up early on Saturday. But that's Rich Hill versus Marco Gonzalez. Pretty even matchup, really, as far as I can tell. Hill is coming off of a pretty decent start. All those West Coast parks really translate well for the pitcher that Hill is, but... Andrew, how do you see that one going?
That's a tough one. I don't like first games of a road trip, you know, new city. But Marco Gonzalez has pretty bad peripherals when you look at just like expected ERA, his K percentage. So I think the Red Sox should make some pretty solid contact on him. Doesn't have an overpowering fastball. So being a lefty, maybe this is a get right Bobby Dalbec series, you know, going back up to the Seattle area. Yeah, I don't know. Maybe he runs into one. I don't want to pick them to win, the Red Sox to win, but I kind of think they will.
Yeah, I agree. I think the Red Sox will win this one. I'm not a big Marco Gonzalez guy. Has given up 11 home runs so far this year, so he's prone to the long ball. Not a strikeout guy. He walks guys, and he gives up home runs. So if your offense is ticking, which hopefully it is, obviously you might be missing some guys, but the offense should be able to get to him. Rich Hill, I think, has looked pretty good his last couple outings. So like I always say about Rich Hill, he'll keep you in it. And I think they can tee up on Marco Gonzalez. So the Red Sox should win this one. If they lose, it's a bad sign.
Gonzalez has gone 7 innings or more in his last 2 outings. So 7 1/3 and then 7 innings against Texas in his last outing. I mean, I don't have as I'm not great at reading all that baseball savant charts and stuff, but I mean, he hasn't been getting killed. So I really want to pick the Mariners here, but I'm just going to go with the Red Sox. I'm just a little concerned, you know, with what lineups we might be trotting out, but officially I'll just go Red Sox game one. Game two, Michael Wacha versus George Kirby. How do you guys have this one?
I'm going to give that to Kirby. And I do think I don't like pitchers after a complete game either. I could see Wacha laboring a little bit. Yeah, I'm going to go ahead and give the nod to Kirby in this matchup.
I can't go against my guy Michael Wacha now. I'm too confident. I get what Andrew's saying. A pitcher after a complete game, like, you never know how much they really have in the tank, but he's just been too good. If this was a matchup against, you know, Garrett Whitlock or maybe even Nick Pivetta, I might take the Mariners because I think Kirby is nasty. But I just have too much faith in Michael Wacha right now. And I don't have faith in that Seattle lineup. I think that Seattle lineup is really overrated. So I'll take the Red Sox in this one. Might be close because, again, I do think Kirby's really good, but I think Wacha will be better. So I'll take the Red Sox.
This, to me, is the most comfortable matchup of the weekend for the Red Sox. So that's who I'm picking here. Kirby pitched against the Red Sox in the last series. Went five innings, gave up five earned runs, only struck out three. We're not quite on the offensive spark that we were at that point, but I think they can get to him again. So put me down for the Red Sox in game two. Finally, on Sunday, which is the last game of the West Coast swing, that'll be a 4:10 p.m. start. Garrett Whitlock versus Robbie Ray. How do you have that one, Andrew?
Robbie Ray has historically done pretty well against the Red Sox, but Robbie Ray is about 2 miles down on his fastball this year. His stuff has not played to what it was the prior year. He's walking more guys. I think we're starting to see maybe he's not the guy that Seattle signed up for, and I think the Red Sox can hit him. His peripherals, again, are terrible. They're smoking him. The average exit velocity, he's in the 7th percentile, which is pretty atrocious. Guys are barreling his balls up. Hard hit percentage is really up. Yeah, there is something going on with Robbie Ray. And if he continues like this, this is going to be one of the worst signings of the offseason.
Yeah, in a rare occurrence, I think this is the first time I've done this all season, but I'm going with the Red Sox sweep. I think the Red Sox win on Sunday. I think they beat Robbie Ray. Robbie Ray does not look like the same guy, as Andrew mentioned. I actually think we talked about managers who might be the next to be fired. I think Scott Servais will be the next manager to be fired if there is one in the middle of the season. Seattle has vastly underperformed. I'm not huge on Whitlock, as I mentioned before, but I think he'll pitch well enough and that, you know, he'll out-duel Robbie Ray, who, like we said, just does not look like the same guy. I think the Red Sox will tag him up and they'll score enough runs to keep themselves in it. So I think the Red Sox will beat him on Sunday.
In Robbie Ray's last five outings, he's given up 3 runs twice, 4 runs twice, and then was tagged for 5 runs in one of them. Unfortunately, I'm not comfortable at all with Whitlock right now, and Whitlock isn't comfortable at all right now. I'm just wondering if maybe they ought to switch him out with Houck, put him back in the pen. I think it's inevitable at this point with all the arms. I get Bloom's logic. You don't want to bounce him back and forth, but I just think at this point for the rest of the year, let's just put him in the pen. He's got a 9 ERA in the last, you know, it says last 7 days. So that's his last two outings, but I'm just not comfortable with.
Cora did come out and I don't know if you saw his comments the other day. He defined Houck's role for the rest of pretty much the season. He said that he's going to be used in 1- and 2-inning situations, similar to how they used Whitlock last year. He's going to be a big part of what we're trying to accomplish. So I did
see that actually. Yeah. It sounds like Houck is going to be the 8th or 9th inning guy, but And yeah, so maybe Hauke isn't going to be the guy to step up if Whitlock does in fact go. But if he gets tagged again for 4 or 5 runs, they're gonna have some tough decisions to make. I wouldn't ride him into the ground, especially you know, if the hip thing continues to linger. So officially, though, I'm gonna take the Mariners in that game. So I've got them 2-1. I wouldn't be surprised if we lose it 2-1 as well. But I'm rooting for Jason this series. So any final thoughts before we wrap?
No, just I think you're finishing the West Coast against a team that has vastly underperformed. The Angels is a little bit of a different story. They were just on a massive losing streak, but the Mariners have just, I mean, they've completely fallen short of what everyone thought they would be. So take advantage of it. Even though you got some guys out, take advantage of that and get back home, you know, with a good winning series.
I think Rob Refsnyder is going to be probably get about at least 8 at bats this series. I think he's going to start the first 2 games against the lefties. So hopefully he uses this as a little showcase for himself.
Well, maybe he'll unexpectedly, well, we don't do studs and duds on the weekends, but perhaps he'll be the equivalent of that. We will wrap and be back on to record on Sunday night to discuss what did happen in this Mariners series. So hopefully the Red Sox keep finding ways to win. They are 6-1 on the West Coast. I mean, that's great. I mean, even if they do drop 2, I mean, a 6-3 West Coast swing is a pretty good one considering our history. So we'll see how they wrap it up out there. And again, we'll be back on Sunday night. Hope everyone has a good weekend. Take care.
This Labor Day at Lowe's, shop member-only doorbuster deals for a limited time. Save $50 on an Ego string trimmer, now $169. Plus, get 50% off select Holland pavers. Not a rewards member? Sign up for free today. But hurry, Labor Day doorbuster deals won't last long. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 9/1 while supplies last. Program subject to terms and conditions. Details at lowes.com/terms. Subject to change.